Welcome to Conversations Around Conversations, about the conversations we just had on the Clubhouse app earlier today. I'm Jess, CEO and co-founder of Broadway Unlocked.
And I'm Joe, co-founder of Broadway Unlocked. This is Tech Theater, Clubhouse Conversations. It's a podcast to continue that conversation. Every Tuesday on Clubhouse at 12:55 Eastern, we have amazing discussions with brilliant people who sit at the intersection of technology and theater.
We always walk away from these Clubhouse talks with so many more thoughts than we actually had time to chat about. So we decided to make this podcast so we could share those thoughts and reach even more of our friends and collaborators. So with that, welcome to Tech Theater Tuesday. Ooh, this was a good week. This week on Clubhouse, we talked about CAA acquiring ICM. To form a mega agency, specifically got into the details or questions around these agencies starting to support their clients in their entrepreneurial ventures in addition to facilitating acting work, directing work, whatever it is. We chatted a little bit about LinkedIn, which was pretty fun. They're starting to roll out paid events on their platform as a new revenue stream for themselves, and that any creator can take advantage of this new feature, but it brings up tons of questions, as always, around the creator economy and their relationship with big tech. And we also talked generally about what's owed to actors and other creative partners from 2020 projects that were delayed, changed, or canceled. One of the best theater festivals in the world, Stratford in Canada, is remounting a production of Chicago and made everybody re-audition. So that brought up a pretty interesting conversation. It was a good week. Lots of fun people in our room this week, too.
It was a good room this week. I liked... what was his name? Chris. He was up early on the stage, which I feel like we don't always get people jumping in that quickly, that soon. And I liked having him sort of in there just the whole time, even when he was just, you know, tapping his little mute, unmute button to cheer, to clap. I guess that's the parlance on Clubhouse.
I know. He back channeled with me and he's like, I'm going to be quiet for a few minutes. My boss just walked in.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Wait, was he back channeling with the Clubhouse DM tools? Mm-hmm. Oh, fun. I haven't used those yet.
Yeah, I just every once in a while I'll get one from someone that's in our room, either about a thought they had about something we're talking about because they don't want to get on stage for some reason, or like with Chris, like acknowledging, I know I'm on your stage, but don't call on me because I am with my boss right now.
Oh, good strategy, Chris. Good strategy.
It's really good. Yeah, and Chris, it's so fun. Chris met us through Clubhouse and we met Chris. He's in Savannah, Georgia. Yep, Savannah, Georgia. And he had me on his YouTube live show with his buddy Ryan McCurdy, who is an incredible multifaceted theater creator. Ryan and I had coffee last week here in New York and had an amazing discussion about being an artist and an entrepreneur and trying to help build theaters for a new future, a new, more entrepreneurial future. And then Chris came back to our room finally to get into the conversation. I feel like that's exactly when everything's working right. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, my brain just jumped to, is there a portmanteau for the artist plus entrepreneur, like an entrepreneur or something annoying like that?
Create entrepreneur, creator entrepreneur, creatorpreneur, artpreneur. Submit your submissions.
Yeah, artpreneurs.
For the worst portmanteau in the world. But no, actually, that's funny. This is a great topic we should talk about in Clubhouse sometime when the news happens to match up. But like, this is a conversation I was having with my friend Michael, and maybe we've talked about it on this podcast before, but like there is a new brand of creators, a new generation of creators that are, what is the word for them? Language is important. Language is powerful. When you can name something, it has power, right? And I'm positive we've talked about this before, but like, yeah, I want to know what that name is. We're on the hunt every week.
We're going to get to it. That, like, let's set that as like a soft goal for these conversations.
I like that.
Like eventually we'll hit it and then we'll sound our air horns and celebrate.
Yeah.
Actually, that's kind of a nice transition in a way into the CAA acquiring, purchasing, stealing, yeah. ICM.
Yeah. Stealing.
I don't know when that came from. I like that our conversation went that direction and sort of pulled out that piece about CAA sort of helping their artists, taking advantage of their artists, their talent, in turning them into brands. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the examples being like Reese Witherspoon, and I can't remember the other one that was in there. Oh, Gwyneth Paltrow with Goop. And how, you know, artists have become synonymous with brands, and like they attract attention and fandom. And so what can you do to monetize that attention, monetize that fandom? And CIA explicitly sort of saying, hey, that's part of our service. That's part of what we do. That's part of how we will help you, dear talent, if you sign with us. Mm-hmm. I think it's super interesting. And I made the comparison on Clubhouse to politicians, and how the type of person, or many of the people that become or are actively politicians, their skill set is designed around winning elections. It's not necessarily designed around writing policy. It's not necessarily around, you know, any of the other mechanisms that are required to actually operate the government. It's almost a bit of celebrity, you know, think of Donald Trump, think of it of AOC, like, you know, not to say that AOC isn't brilliant and couldn't write a bill herself. Her mandate is to like win attention for the causes that she cares about. And some of that is through the legislation that she backs and co-writes, but they have whole teams and suites of people that are charged with actually writing laws and researching things and doing this sort of behind the scenes mechanics of actually running and operating a government, which is like, oh yeah, of course, it takes a village. And it felt similar to me that CIA is like, hey, this is a hard thing to do. And like, you know, Reese Witherspoon had the resources and the business acumen to figure out how to do this, to assemble and acquire her own team of people to do it. And we're just gonna specialize in that. Our agency is gonna get good at doing this, you know, turning talent into brands, into marketable, sellable entities and objects. And made a ton of sense to me. But I think you took it the direction of sort of, will these agencies now take advantage of people who they're putting in this position?
Yeah, I actually want to take it in that direction. I think something we didn't get to talk about on Clubhouse, but that I figured out and clarified in my head that has to do with all that. Go with me on this journey through my brain. This is when we were talking about this on Clubhouse and you started making that comparison. I was like, oh yeah, of course. Like that makes so much sense. And then my next thought was like, does this any of this fucking matter? Who fucking cares if CAA or ICM and ICM are like, who cares? It's like for a problem for movie stars. But that got me thinking about what I can't remember what the name of the theory is that you talk about a lot, but that's like the economic theory that it's like 1% of anything is really, really successful and or financially soluble or whatever it is. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, but maybe we'll get there.
Like top 1% thing. Income in the United States is like consolidated in like the top 7%. I have no idea what the number is, but like a very low number of mm-hmm. people, right? Yeah. There's like things work really well financially for a very, very small amount of people who amass an enormous amount of money. And it just kind of works okay for everybody else, but that is their lives. So we do it. And that's what I got thinking about with this. Ultimately, what I would love to talk about is like, if you follow that line of like, does this matter to fucking anyone? What I mentioned in Clubhouse was like, oh, right. Once I ask myself that question, no, it doesn't matter with movie stars because there's big money. That's that 1%, right? These businesses work. There's an enormous amount of money. And the thing that's worrisome, right, from a creator's perspective about what you flagged for politicians is like, in this case, an agency whose agents get broker jobs, acting jobs, which is very specific for their clients or set design or whatever it is, now have to have a division that's playing in entrepreneurship, which not only means that some people at the agency have to get good at it, but they have to have like a scout system in place, right? To source venture cash flow, because at the level we're talking about, right? If you're like Jessica Alba, an honest company, like, you know, once they're involved, this isn't for small businesses. It's not even really for Reese Witherspoon's production company because it's not really scalable. You know what I mean? So that's fine in this instance because everybody makes so much money already. You can bloat that out with extra teams and extra basically middlemen who are getting money and making money. But it's that moment that it passes the bar of 1% down to the rest of the acting community, the arts community, the creator community, whatever it is, where you're just adding more people taking what so little they have away. And that's like the thing that I don't know. I was just, I guess it ultimately the question was that came to my mind was like, is this just how it has to be? Like, are we incapable as humans of
operating any other way. Like a very small percentage of people make a ton of money and you build business models for them and you build and build and build and grow and gobble, and everybody else fucking gets taken advantage of and suffers as those models trickle down to them.
Yeah, I'd be curious how CAA has sort of mapped this out for themselves. Like, what is it that makes it profitable for them? Like, is this that they spin off a company and they own a piece of that company, mm-hmm. right? And so they themselves aren't necessarily operating or executing. You know, they aren't running Goop. They aren't creating, they aren't running the production house. They're just helping to get it off the ground, helping to connect the dots between the right people, mm-hmm. and keeping a percentage of the company almost as like a co-founder or something, mm-hmm. like that. And then, yeah, how much of that company is retained by the artist who is like the namesake of it or right. whatever. And in like, in that world, like, is it actually like a bastion of job creation? You know, these are all these companies that are being the, you know, the capital is being sourced through the lens of the agency in a way that maybe the human who, you know, isn't famous like Reese Witherspoon, like couldn't have acquired on their own, like would have had to go out and pitch friends and family up to, you know, investors. So it's sort of like short-circuiting the investment cycle into these companies and helping them to be created, hopefully in a, like a scalable way. But is that like all of a sudden a bunch of little companies and like 15 new jobs that, you know, people are working at these entities and these agencies? Or is it like somehow in-house at the agency and it's like agency people running Goop, and they're both owning a piece of it, but then like shuttling the business and like the revenue back to themselves, as opposed to like, hey, here's this separate entity that is going to hopefully be successful and profitable and they will then own a piece of it. I'd be curious, yeah, how they're actually structuring that.
Well, and I just think let's just operate from the premise that it's net good in the CAA ICM model, right? Job creation, all the things you just said. 100% what's coming down the line is small creators, the people that we always talk about who are making on these tech platforms. So the 99% of other creators are going to end up having to sign shit deals. Like in 10 years, if I want to sign with, if I'm not mega famous, right? And I'm not making a ton of money and I'm not with CAA or ICM, I'm still like, I don't know, in boutique, you know, agency land, and I'm making a couple $100,000 even, I don't know, $100,000 a year being a creator, I'm going to have to sign a contract with an agent that says they get a piece of any on like any business I create, because that's what I have to do with all my acting, right? Like as an actor, I never understood this either. I mean, I get how, why it exists, but like if I have an agent, so this is non 1%, 99%. If I have an agent, anything, any job I get, I owe them 10%, whether they find it for me or not, which means what's coming down from the CAA ICM thing and where it works up top is down bottom. It just crushes people and takes more of their money away.
Got it. So in that world, you have signed with CAA and they don't help you in any way whatsoever to launch a business around yourself, the entity that is Jessica Ryan, and they still take some small percentage of it per whatever contract you signed. Is that the situation that you just described?
I don't know if that's true for CAA or ICM, but I think it tracks, right? That's how it works for getting an acting job. That's period. If you know, it's in like state agreements, like the agents are licensed, so it's all regulated and you owe them money for any job you get yourself. So someday what's going to trickle down, not in the CAA land, is I'm with, I don't know, Waldorf agency in New York City. And it's going to, in that contract, it's going to be something that means they get a piece of all of the stuff that I'm doing as a creator.
Ooh, interesting. Let's get our hands on some contracts. I'm guessing that none of this actually exists yet, but
no. The point being, and the conversation like that I'm really interested in is like all this creator stuff that we talk about doesn't really work for 99%. It's fulfilling, no doubt, right? You can make things and that makes us happy, but it's not financially soluble for 99, I don't know, 97, let's be generous, percent of creators. And often it starts, it's what starts in the working part of the business, CAA, ICM level, but then that trickles down into the practices for the other 97% of people. And we're pretending, like our conversation today on Clubhouse, that like everything's working great. LinkedIn is offering creators a platform to have live events and Clubhouse is investing in their creators. But like no one's actually getting it. 97% of the people are not actually getting anything out of it. And I am appalled by the idea that someone would just automatically, if I wanted to have an agent, someone would automatically get a piece of whatever I create outside of like just auditioning for things and not surprised. I put money on that ending up being in agreements in at least a decade.
Well, let's put a pin in that one too, Luce, and we'll come back and look at it in 2 years, 5 years, 10 years.
Yeah, it's just so predatory. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it sounds like trash. And like, I don't know a ton about these talent agencies, but it seems like, at least for me, you know, like things like Entourage, which I actually didn't even watch the show.
I liked that show.
That it is a predatory environment.
Yes. And that goes across the 1% and the 99% or whatever. My percentages are not consistent, but yes, it's predatory no matter what. It's just weighted much more predatory on the non-movie star side of things.
Mm-hmm. So maybe this is like a, oh, this is a good idea in theory, but inside of a terrible predatory environment, it's going to be a terrible and predatory idea.
Yeah. But like, the larger question that I posed earlier that I'm just curious about what you think about is like, it seems to me, and this was what I was mulling over today, all models ultimately fall back to this. It works really well for a small amount of people and works really shitty for a whole bunch of people, like the majority of people. Like, is there any way for us to not operate that way? Like, does it ever work out for the 97%? You know what I mean?
Yeah. It makes me think of like smaller economies, I guess is the word I'll use, like smaller marketplaces, smaller mm-hmm. environments. It's like, I feel like one of the things that digital technology has done is it's sort of flattened the landscape and put us all into the same big bucket. You know, if we just use like, let's call it the United States as our like area, our region, where like it used to be that like you couldn't go do a thing in California or be part of something in California before digital technology really existed. So you like did the things in New York and it created a little smaller local economy and like people selling goods and services to each other because it was not possible to branch outside of it. And with things like talent and intellectual property that can travel, they're not physical entities. So mm-hmm. like they can travel sort of instantaneously across digital communication methods, movies, music, etc., that it did like have this sort of race to the top sort of a thing. Only like everyone is going to want access to whatever like the best of the best is. So the most famous, the most interesting, the most, which has kind of taken the value away from all of those regional people who are good, but like not the best. They are not Ariana Grande. I think there was an example with like when the gramophone was like created or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it was like, okay, you know, there's this one woman who is the absolute best singer. And when she shows up at a theater, like it sells out, everyone loses their minds, but she can only show up to so many theaters across so many weeks, across so many years. And so every other theater, like people go see whoever's around, like whoever's local, whoever's available. But then once like the gramophone came out and like the ability to reproduce music, you could have a recording of the best person, which had like a negative impact on people actually going out to and seeing the second best, third best, 10th best, 100th best people. Mm-hmm. Cause they're like, why would I go for the 100th best just because it's, you know, available locally when I can access the best. Mm-hmm. So it feels like it's in that realm mm-hmm. of like, we can't sort of put that genie back in the bottle. It's like, you can have access to the best. So what's going to convince you to engage with, interact with, purchase something that isn't technically the best? And I think like back to that idea of like regional connection and local connection, and like it becomes its best in its own way, some niche way, to try and like break down the nationalization of how we consume and purchase and are entertained, and to think about it more regionally or more locally, and how to like get people excited to do something like in their town and in their neighborhood and support the person who's living across the street from them.
I mean, there's something that really interesting in that about around scarcity, right? Because of course, as a creator, all of my hackles are raised when you say the best. It's not personal, but like the best, because in art, 90% of people who are being, let's say the kind of folks who are handled by CAA and ICM, are not the best at anything. They're maybe like very good looking or gave someone a blowjob once or twice, or, you know, were in the right place, the right time, or are extraordinary, you know, artists, but like it's never really the best. And like that's why I get so defensive thinking about this for the other group of people who don't make this level of money, is because there's so many the bests way better than the people who are making all this money at the top. But so what was enlightened as you set for me, as you said all that, was it's the scarcity, right? And that's what we don't have. I might be the best actor in the entire world, and I'm in, I don't know, Minneapolis, Minnesota, but I don't have the same amount of scarcity that, like, Ariana Grande, you can see her 20 times during the year live, whatever, I don't know. And it's just not the same, right? You're like, oh yeah, you're in Minneapolis, I'm going to see you at the bar, and I'm going to see you when I go see the show, and I'm whatever it is, you know? Mm-hmm. And that feels like somewhere, maybe a secret to unlock for the rest in this idea of, like, there's value in decentralizing or unnationalizing economies. I mean, that something's there with scarcity.
Yeah, I like the scarcity lens, because I think that's right. I think it's like one part, like, I don't know if it's fully scarcity, but it's like the demand is different for an Ariana Grande versus local dude in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And like Ariana Grande, talented, to your point of like the best, like best is like by design a flexible term. You know,
she is really good though,
by not the way. The best in any sort of measurable way. It's like we all just agree it's the best, the biggest, the whatever, the most desirable. And it's a lot of artifice, like you're saying, and it's not necessarily based in any level of skill or measurable competition-based sort of like this person actually is the best, undisputed.
I just want to take 2 seconds to compliment you on the nicely packaged way you just reset everything I said, which was like, they probably gave someone a blowjob.
Yeah, scarcity. Like, so there's less cultural demand for the random person in Minneapolis, even though you could go see them all the time, or you could only go see them once or twice.
Yeah.
Scarcity doesn't matter in that world because nobody wants to go see him. Or just, you know, his friends and family are going to show up at the bar. So it's like, how are we dissociating or like playing up or giving extra weight to the localness of someone to make them more desirable to then like increase the demand? And it's about changing like consumer behavior and consumer opinions. Mm-hmm. It's like, if I can be 1/10 as excited to see this person in Minneapolis as I am to go see Ariana Grande, like, do I go buy the ticket? And it's like one part of that excitement is like the local connection and the local feeling and the local whatever. And it helps that one person to sell more tickets to their show or actually like survive. Although I guess they're just on a conveyor belt towards Ariana Grande status. Kind of inside of that artifice of what makes someone, what makes Ariana Grande like the most attractive, appealing, interesting, best person, and therefore like justify the price of concert tickets and the album sales and all those things. How do we introduce different factors that Ariana Grande like cannot or will never be able to compete on because she is not of Minneapolis? I have no idea where she's from. So that'd be amazing if she was from Minneapolis. And, you know, she can really blow it out in Miami where she's from and like have that little leg up there, but she can't take that with her to all the different cities and like the local connection to it. So changing our perception of like what we value in one of the things we consume.
Okay, thanks. I appreciate you digging me out of my nihilistic hole because I definitely, after this conversation today, was like, this sucks for everyone but a tiny group of people. What do you think about the, Lucy just jumped in to let us know, breaking news piece one, Joe.
Da-da-da-da-da-da. Yeah.
No, you want to read what you just discovered?
Oh, I'm breaking the news, not Lucy. So I just discovered that Ariana Grande is from Boca Raton, Florida. I was pretty close with Miami.
She fucking kills it in Boca Raton.
Yeah, crushes it with all those old people.
And breaking news number two is that the parent company of CAA is rumored to be going public. So this, of course, like changes their balance sheets and their valuations and all of that good stuff.
Yeah, now they can be like, look, we have this whole potential addressable market, like,
that includes
we're worth more in theory.
The beauty industry and the production industry
So it's all food and beverage. It's all pageantry, actually. They're not going to make a single company. They're not going to take one person into a new entity. They're just going to go public.
That just makes me think. I'm thinking of myself. What a mess. Like, agents are licensed for a 10% cut of my acting job. So let's say like I was looking at CAA or ICM. And I mean, I would... You know what's interesting? I just got lost in a lot of different like mucky things, but I'll focus on one that I think is really interesting is like at the end of the day in an actor's life in particular, an agent is there to run interference, right? They They make relationships that'll get you a job. They source auditions that are going to get you a job. They negotiate your contracts for you so that you can just show up and do your craft. But like, as soon as you add in this entrepreneur bullshit, I mean, I guess this is back to why it's so predatory. You can just keep being an artist who's like, thanks for doing my shit. I don't even know what I just signed, but I'm going to go say fun lines, or I'm going to like give away my business idea. But more likely, this is just going to create, the actors are going to have to become more savvy because, right, like I'm not giving an agent 10%, just here's 10% of equity in my company that's valued at $2 billion simply because I'm Gwyneth Paltrow. I mean, Goop's not that. That's not what I was insinuating, but you know
what
I mean.
Is it not? Is it not?
I don't actually know enough about Goop, and I just realized that that sounded like I had an opinion, and I don't have an opinion about Goop. But you know what I mean? Like, I'm not, you can't legislate that, or what is it called? License that in the same way that agents' relationships with actors currently work.
That one just back to wanting to see a contract, which does not maybe even yet exist, but I get your point.
I know. It's they're state licensed. I mean, I have to find my, I could probably find my contract with my first agent.
I forget what your point was. I'm sorry.
Well, it's just like if the idea for an agent is to like take the pressure off the artist to do business by adding all this extra stuff in, then it's doing the exact opposite.
Just adding more pressure.
Yeah. And more opportunities to get taken advantage of.
So you're going to have to build your business while fighting your agent.
Yes. Right. Or deciding if you even need your agent at all. Like, how do you? Yeah. Oh,
this feels akin to there was that rich guy who was paying high school students to skip college and start businesses.
No, I don't think I knew about that. Did I? Did we talk about that?
I think we talked about it once. I don't know if it was here. Mm. Lucy's giving me the head nod. Thank you. I thought I was losing my mind. And it was sort of like to his like amongst his reasons was like to shake up the system, to kind of call attention to the fact that higher education isn't the like the dream and the vision and a worthwhile investment in the way that it maybe used to be and is still marketed as. And I feel like there's a movement brewing inside of this podcast right now to fire your agent. So let's start our own collective. We're going to help actors and artists start their own brand businesses, almost like merchandising. But we're not going to be agents. We're going to be something else. I don't know what it is.
This has been a real roller coaster of a podcast episode today.
Yes, indeed. Should we just skip all those other things?
Which other things?
LinkedIn and whatever that third topic was.
Yeah. We're just doom and gloom about the creator economy today, I guess. But yeah. I mean, it was an important conversation to have. And I hope that more people are chatting about this, because what I really appreciated about you, your role in this conversation in particular today, right, is that you like jumped immediately to like, I don't accept the premise that this isn't fixable. And what are the core things that are not working about it? And how could we rethink?
Yeah, fire your agent.
Yeah, that's basically it. Don't do that. Oh my God. We're going to get hate mail.
Yeah, we would love to hear if you fired your agent.
No, so don't do that.
Keep those conversations going around and around, but not with your agent. And hit us up on Twitter. We're at BWI Unlocked. And use the hashtag TechTheaterCH to share your thoughts and get into the conversation.
And if you enjoyed today, please join our next conversation Tuesday at 12:55 Eastern on Clubhouse. It's live. It's an hour. It's salty. It's spicy. And you can raise your hand, jump in, and share your thoughts.
Salty and spicy.
Yeah.
Sounds delicious.
Does it?
And if you'd like to join the Broadway Unlocked family, you can host a show in our club. Just visit broadwayunlocked.com/ch and you can pitch your idea.
Every single topic we talk about each week is inspired by the articles we read and share inside our company Slack, as well as the people who join us on our stage and chime in. So follow us on Twitter and join us in the conversation. Until then, see you next week.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.